Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to episode number 49. We have a very, very special guest today. We have Bob Berg joining us, and Bob is a sought-after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences, sharing the platform with everyone from today's business leaders and broadcast personalities to even a former U.S. president. Bob is the author of a number of books on sales, marketing, and influence, with a total book sales of well over a million copies. His book, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, has sold over a half a million copies and has been translated into 21 languages. It has been released in a new expanded edition with foreword by Huffington Post founder Arianna Huffington. Bob is an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He is also an unapologetic animal fanatic and is a past member of the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption Clinic and Ranch in his town of Jupiter, Florida. Well, Bob, hello and welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm great, Matt. Terrific to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the show. Today, we're going to talk about your book, The Go-Giver, and it's very applicable to our audience of financial services professionals all over North America. So my question right out of the gate is, why don't we talk about the overall premise of the book?
Sure. Yeah, the premise itself is simply that shifting your focus, and this is really the key point, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. And that doing so is not only a pleasant way to conduct business, it's actually the most profitable way for a financial advisor to conduct business.
Give us a review of the five laws you and John share in the book.
Sure. The laws themselves are the laws of value, compensation, influence, authenticity, and receptivity. The first one, the law of value, is sort of the foundational premise, if you will, but the foundational law, I should say. And it simply says your true worth in the business sense, your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, this sounds a bit counterintuitive when you first hear it. Give more in value than I take in payment? It sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy, right? And so we simply have to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar amount, a dollar figure. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea that brings with it so much worth or value that someone will willingly exchange their money for it and be ecstatic that they did? And we can take it on a very, very basic level. We can take this within the context of an advisor-client relationship. Let's say this advisor charges a certain fee. Let's say they're fee-based, and they charge a fee to handle this person's portfolio and so forth. Well, they are providing value in terms of they're helping this client create and manage their wealth and earn a lot more money than what they're paying in. So this client is, over the time of the investments, receiving much more than what they're paying. And the advisor makes a very healthy profit by doing so, which they should. And so what happens is, in a free market-based exchange, if you will, and when I say free market, I simply mean no one's forced to do business with the other, both parties come away better off than they were before. The client receives much more in value than what they paid, and the advisor obviously makes a very healthy profit. So both parties come away better off than they were before the transaction. And that's really the essence of the law of value.
Okay. Was there one piece of advice you received, like something that really pushed you over the edge here of being this go-giver focused, and that was such a difference maker for you to write this book and to continue to speak about this over the years?
Well, you know, years ago when I first started in sales, and actually I'd been about 2 years into being a sales professional, and I was doing well. I had learned sales, I studied sales, came into sales not knowing anything, and floundered for a few months, but once I began reading and studying and going to seminars and my sales were great, but I was still not anywhere near what I could potentially be. And really it had to do with my focus being in the wrong place. And I remember I was selling for a company, it was a high ticket product I was selling. And I remember coming back one day into the office, I was discouraged because the sale did not happen. And it was really my not handling it correctly. And one of the older people there, and he wasn't actually even in sales, he was in the engineering department of the company, and I think he was soon to retire. I didn't know him well, but he was a nice guy. And he said, I think he saw me as like Joe in the story, in The Go-Giver, that guy who had potential but was not anywhere close to realizing it. And he said, Berg, can I give you a piece of advice? And I said, sure, absolutely, please do. And he said, if you want to make a lot of money in business, actually, he said, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. Your target is serving others. Now, when you hit the target, he continued, you'll get a reward, and that reward will come in the form of money, and you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. Your target is serving others. And that was a major shift for me. That's where I started to realize. And here's what it really comes down to when you think about it. And I say this often when I speak at a sales conference, I'll ask, how many of you agree with the following statement? Nobody is going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. And we all laugh because we all know that. Yeah, true, yeah. Right? That you're right. They're not going to buy from us because we need the money, and they're not going to buy from us even because we're a really, really nice person. Mm-hmm. They're going to buy from us only because they believe they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And that's the only reason they should. You know, you mentioned some of the countries that this podcast goes to, and it one of them was Australia. And it reminds me of in Adam Grant's excellent book, Give and Take, he cited a study by a firm that was charged with discovering why the top Australian financial advisors were the top most successful financial advisors in terms of income earned. And so they set out to see, what was it? What were the determining factors? Well, of course, financial acumen was important, very important, of course. The ability to work hard, very, very important. But a lot of people did that. Mm-hmm. The determining factor turned out to be that the most financially successful Australian financial advisors simply put the interest of the client ahead of themselves and ahead of their company. And because of that, they themselves and their companies were the most financially profitable.
There have been some controversial aspects of the book, and there's a specific line that seems to get people's attention, which is where you and John wrote, does it make money, right? As a major question, it's not a bad question. It's a great question. It's just a bad first question. Now, as an entrepreneur myself, and you are fiercely entrepreneurial, like, how do you balance all of that stuff? You touched on it there a little bit, that we know that people aren't going to buy because we need to make the sale. Mm-hmm. But we also do need to be focused on, does it make money? Help me with that.
Yeah, and it's a great question. And again, remember what Pindar, the mentor in the story, said. It's a great question. It's a very important question. If it doesn't make money, you've got yourself a hobby, not a business. But it's a bad first question. Why? Because again, people who are investing with you, people who are buying from you, people who are, they're not doing it for your sake or because your focus is on it making money. They're doing it because they believe it's of value to them or to the marketplace or to whomever. So if your first question is, will it make money? You're not actually attacking the correct question, which, does it serve? Does it provide value? Is there a market for it, either an established market or one that you have a reasonable chance of creating? If there is, okay, now, and you've got something that's viable, a great product, it's going to serve the marketplace, you're going to have a market for it, or you can create a market for it. Okay, now you've got to ask, will it make money? Because again, you could be the greatest product in the world that everyone loves, but if it's not profitable, you're out of business. Asking if it will make money is very important, but that cannot be the focus. The focus must be on providing value to the marketplace. This is why John David Mann and I say that money is simply an echo of value. Mm-hmm. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which simply means nothing more than the focus must be on the value. The focus must be on the value you give, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of that value.
Well, let's switch gears and talk about another part of the book here, which is mentorship. Personally, mentors changed everything for me. I still have two active mentors in my life, and I'm so honored to have them in my life because I can call them. They thankfully give me their time and help me process things in a way that I normally would not be able to process, really from their experience. So how do our listeners find a mentor? And most importantly, what should they look at if they're doing things differently? Like how do you find the bizarro world or the antithesis of a mentor? What sort of warning signs should you see there?
Well, you know, when people ask me about finding a mentor, and I agree with you, I think it's wonderful to find a mentor because, again, they're going to help you cut your learning curve time by years. But what I think a lot of people do that's counterproductive is they will find someone who they'd like to mentor them, and they will just say to this person, hey, I need a mentor. Will you be my mentor? And that's sort of like saying to somebody, hey, will you share with me your 30 or 40 years experience in business, even though you don't know me from a hole in the wall?
Sure, sure.
It's like approaching someone and saying, hey, want to get married? As opposed to asking for a date, as the saying goes. Mm-hmm. A mentor-protege relationship is just that. It's a relationship, and it builds over time. So I think that by and large, to approach someone that way, who probably has lots of other people asking them to mentor, I think it's not, you never know, it could, but it's not usually something that's going to work out positively. However, you can still ask anyone, practically anyone, for advice. And the way I would do it is to let this person know that you know you followed their work, you respect their work, what have you. You're right now expanding your business or what have you. And here's where the key question comes in. I understand you're very busy. If it's appropriate, I'd like to ask you one or two very specific questions. Because what you've done here is you've respected the process and you've respected them, and you haven't come across in a way that you feel entitled to their advice. You framed it as one of respect, and a person is much more likely to say, oh, sure, you know, by all means, go ahead, or even sure, a couple of quick questions would be fine. Right. And then you can do that. You let this person know how much you appreciate it. Now, you make sure you've researched this person. You never want to ask a question that you could have known the answer to by simply looking it up, right, on the internet. There's no excuse these days. But you let them know how much you appreciate it, that you look forward to putting it into their advice into use, and that you'll get back and let them know how things, you know, have turned out. And I would write a personalized, handwritten letter to them that day, again, just quickly thanking them, letting them know how much you value their time and expertise. What you might also want to do is again, through researching this, you've discovered what their favorite charity is. Make a small donation in their name. It will get back to them. You don't do this to kiss up to them or anything, but simply to, again, show respect, letting them know you're communicating that you don't take this for granted and that you want in whatever way you can to create value for them. Or if they collect old books on, you know, Roman history, you know, find something like that and have it sent to them. But make the effort. And then 3 weeks later, a month later, you get back with them, you kind of update them, maybe ask another quick question, what have you. And over time, if a mentor-protege relationship is supposed to happen, it will.
I love how you position that, because listening to you say that's exactly how I was able to build in their long-term relationships. And one of my favorite parts is, well, I was just talking to one of mine who's a very successful financial advisor out in Beverly Hills. And I was talking to him, and I had asked him a couple of questions, exactly the way you were just, you know, always asking questions, well thought out questions. And he says, you know, Matt, I look forward to these calls because you always ask me questions that make me think of the way I'm doing things differently. And you talk about that in the book. So can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, I think asking questions is always where it's at. So just like you did, the more well thought out the question is, that's in a sense adding value to their lives because it challenges them and it keeps them. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are mentors who just, they love doing that.
Yeah.
but they love it to be appreciated. And they love to know it's making a difference and that the person they're mentoring doesn't do it with a sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big thing.
At my old, the place that I was a consultant before I went out on my own, I remember my boss at the time had said, you know, if my door's open, that means that I'm available and you can ask me any question. And so I was one of those rare people, of course, Bob, who was going to ask him these questions because I was like, I have this guy's ear for however long I can have it. I'm a perpetual student. I remember walking by one day. And he said, okay, Matt, you know, what question do you have? And I said, you know what? It's not a question. I just want to thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for the opportunity that you've given me. I want to thank you for the learning that you've given me. And I want to thank you for the leadership that you have continued to move me in the right direction. And his mouth kind of dropped open and he said, you know what? Nobody ever thanks me.
Yeah, so, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and it is to me, Bob. It just blew me away that this person who has built this today, an unbelievable juggernaut of a company, and that people don't look at him hiring you and taking that risk and teaching you everything that, you know, he wants you to learn. That's a huge gift, man. And I think showing appreciation, and I think that's one of the philosophical underpinnings of your book here, right, is to make sure that you are being truly thankful for these different opportunities. Am I wrong there?
No, you're totally right. And one of the, when we talk about adding value to a relationship, to the customer, client relationship, it's of course got to be more than just the product or service itself, because basically, you know, we deal in the same products and services, right? It's not that technology has leveled off the playing field. Most products and services in every field now are pretty much the same. So if the potential customer or client does not see a significant difference in the product or service itself, it's always going to come down to who has the lowest price or fee. And then you're a commodity. And as you know, when you sell on low price, you're a commodity. When you sell on high value, you're a resource. And your goal is to become a trusted resource. And then you have people who know you, they like you, they trust you. And then the experts like Bill Gates show you how to turn that into lots and lots and lots of great referrals and introductions. And you have a fantastic practice. Now, in terms of that value part, there's got to be additional value aside from the intrinsic value of the product or service. That's great, but it's not enough because you've got lots of competitors out there. So how do you become that person who separates yourself and takes price or fee out of the equation? Well, we do this through becoming that additional value. And while there are probably hundreds of ways to communicate that kind of additional value, they tend to come down to five, what we call elements of value. And they are excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation.
Nice.
And to the degree that we can communicate one or more, hopefully all five of those elements at every touch point, well, that's the degree that we do separate ourselves. But appreciation, gratitude, as you were saying, is such a huge part of it. And it's with everyone we deal with. It's not just with our clients. It's with the people we work with.
Absolutely.
It's the people at the front office. It's mm-hmm.
I love that, Bob. And that, to me, if there was, obviously there's going to be a lot of great value, but if there was one piece that people could really bring out of this podcast today, and especially for, we have a fiercely entrepreneurial listenership, and so many of them don't realize that just that pause, that thanking the person who's at the front mm-hmm. desk, who's the receptionist, who's the director of first impressions, whatever you want to call that person, a lot of times that thank you goes a lot farther than that paycheck. But my background is as a therapist, and I started in the consulting world from a very different angle than a lot of other consultants do, because I was never a financial advisor. And you talk about the go-giver philosophy being totally congruent with human nature. Now, we know, Bob, that human nature is not always super positive. So how do you reconcile that in this book?
Well, there's an overriding element of human nature, I think, when it comes to the sales process. And by the way, to every process in life. And that's this. And I think Dale Carnegie really summed it up brilliantly in his classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People, written about 80 years ago. And I think that this was his underlying premise. And it's where he said that ultimately people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. And that's just human nature. Okay, we all seek happiness as human beings. We're all individuals. We're all different. However, we all, every single one of us, just it's the way we're built, we seek happiness. Now, as Harry Brown used to say, everyone values happiness differently, right? So what makes one person happy might be meaningless to someone else or even cause them unhappiness. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all have limited resources and times in terms of time, money, knowledge, energy, wisdom. So people are always making choices. So human nature says that when you're dealing with someone, you've got to understand that in their mind, it's about them. And that every decision they make, either consciously or unconsciously, is designed to bring them closer to happiness, that mental feeling of well-being. As long as we understand that, now we can, and what we like to say as part of law number three, the law of influence, is when you move from an I focus or me focus to what we call an other focus. Mm-hmm. So again, just like the Australian financial advisors, right, who we talked about earlier, to the degree you move off that focus on yourself and on to focusing on what will make your potential client happy, now that's the degree that you're tapping into human nature. You're respecting human nature and acting accordingly. And when we say, you know, an other focus, that doesn't mean you're anyone's doormat. It doesn't mean you're a martyr. It doesn't mean you're self-sacrificial. Not at all. Mm-hmm. It just simply means you understand that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those advisors they know, like, and trust. And there's simply no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by moving your focus onto them, making your win all about their win.
One of the most influential sales books I ever read was Dr. Robert Cialdini's The Six Principles of Ethical Influence. And you just used the word a number of times here. Let's talk about influence, because you address that specifically in The Go-Giver. So talk to us about influence a little bit, please.
Well, on a very, very basic level, you can define, you know, we can define influence as simply the ability to move a person or persons to a desired action, usually within the context of a specific goal. Dr. Cialdini's work, of course, in that is legendary. Now, while that's the definition of influence, right, moving someone to action, I don't think it's the essence of influence. I believe the essence of influence is pull as opposed to push, or as we like to ask, how far can you push a rope? And of course, the answer is not very, at least not very fast or very effectively. Right. You know, you never hear people say, well, that Dave, he is so influential. Susan, she's so influential. She has a lot of push with people. No, she has a lot of pull. That's what influence is. It's an attraction. It's pull. Great influencers, Matt, great influencers attract people first to themselves and then and only then to their ideas. And they do this not through pushing themselves on others, pushing their products on others, or being pushy. No, they do this through pull. They in this way, they earn commitment. And once you've done that, now, you know, you're nine steps ahead of the game in a 10-step game, and you're able to create a very beneficial situation. You know, great influence is never about the influencer. It's always about that person we want to influence, that person whose life we choose to add value to.
This other focus, to me, could be a slippery slope, okay? You're talking about being a go-giver and being other-focused. We work with a lot of people in financial services who are pleasers, right? They are constantly, constantly giving. How do you reconcile being a go-giver but still being able to say no?
Oh, actually, and you know, I'm so glad you brought that up. There's nothing about being a go-giver that says that you should be a pushover or that you should be naive or again, that you should be a doormat or a martyr or anything else. No, not at all. A go-giver tends to be very, very successful. And because of this, they have to say no. They need to be able to say no much more often than they say yes to people. The difference, though, is when a go-giver says no, they do it in such a way, they do it with tact and kindness and empathy, and they do it in such a way that they make the other person feel genuinely good about themselves and valued.
Do you have any specific words of wisdom to our listening audience, which are financial services professionals? Do you think that there's anything truly different and unique that pertains to them that might not pertain to other business people?
Well, I mean, you're obviously dealing with a huge part of someone's life. This is, you know, when you bring the value you bring them is not just a matter of their nest egg. It's a matter of what that ends up, you know, the nest egg, that's the, what we would call the MacGuffin, right? It's, it's what seems to be what it's about, but it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's about the feeling of security, the feeling of peace of mind, the feeling that they're able to build something that they can leave to their children, or that they're able to, you know, spend their retirement doing what they want to do as opposed to what they have to do. There's so much involved, and it's very, very emotional. It's being able to educate someone as to why the best type of portfolio they can have is a very boring portfolio, right?
Yeah.
You know, but people don't always know that because they read the news about, right? You know, so so there's a lot of, you know, when you're in sales, okay, and really that is what it is. But you look at selling as really discovering what that other person wants, needs, and desires and helping them to get it. And that's only through being other focused. It's only through listening. It's only through really caring. And when you say, well, when you sell, what are you really giving people? Because the word, you know, the old English root of the word sell was selan, which meant to give. Hmm. So when you're selling, you're literally giving. But what are you giving? Well, when you're in the sales process, when you're in front of a man or a woman or a couple or what, you know, and you're really going through this with them, what they're going to do, you're giving them time, attention, counsel, education, empathy, and most of all, value. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I mean, I think someone who's a financial services professional has one of the most important jobs there are.
Yeah. I used to jokingly say that I put them on par with your accountant, your priest, and your attorney, but I don't joke about that anymore because I truly believe that they are on par with those other professionals. Bob, thank you so much for your time today. And you, if our listeners have a chance, they can go to www.thegogiver.com and immediately download Chapter 1 from this international bestseller, The Go Giver, and access lots of value-added resources, such as that special report. You mind telling us a little bit about the special report? Because you talked about the five principles, but give everybody a quick preview of what they can download.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? We took the five principles and we put that in terms of the prospecting process and basically said that if you ever ask yourself the question, who do I talk to next now that my list of names is running out? Well, it's a lousy feeling. Mm-hmm. And so so what we do is sort of show how utilizing the five laws from the Go-Giver, you can tap into that and be able to meet people in a way, whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, do so in a way that you have confidence doing it, that you have fun doing it, and that the other person enjoys the process. Because if you're prospecting correctly, you should be enjoying it and the other person should be enjoying it. Let's face it, if we don't enjoy it, we're probably not going to do it.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
So yeah, download that report if you'd like, and I hope you enjoy it.
Well, thank you for that gift there, Bob, and thank you for the gift of your thought leadership, and I'd love to have you back on the show at some point. So I hope you have a wonderful day, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And if you haven't subscribed to our podcast yet, please make sure that you click the subscribe now button below. That way, when we come out with a great podcast just like this, it'll show up on your listening device. Thank you all very much for listening to the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. My name is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.